So, Sydney, what is your favorite thing about Village Books? Why do you like to come here?
Because I like to look around.
It's a really good bookstore that survived by being pretty much true to itself.
I like the mix of used books and new books.
Mm-hmm.
And, just a nice atmosphere.
A place to sit and kick back for a while and read.
I think, the atmosphere.
Their selection is really good.
Mm-hmm.
All their sections are good, and they've integrated used books.
I just like the feel of it. It's cozy.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we were just kind of digging this little section down here, all the interesting, the locally published stuff.
It's not Barnes & Noble.
All right. You caught me. I am a self-proclaimed bibliophile. Whenever I get the chance to stop by a bookstore, I struggle to contain my elation. And no bookseller satisfies my bibliophilic tendencies quite like Village Books in Bellingham, Washington. It's cute, it's quaint, it's local. Ah, gosh, I get goosebumps just thinking about it. But I'm not here to talk about how much I, and many other people, love Village Books, or how I feel like time stops when I step foot in the store and begin to browse shelf after wonderful shelf. I'm here to take you into the past, so we can talk about the future of this remarkable local bookseller. Because time never actually stops for any of us, though I may sometimes feel otherwise. And the funny thing about time is, it's a paradox. You see, time itself never changes. There will always be 24 hours in every day, 7 days in every week, and so on. But the passage of time is the underlying reason why the world is so, well, changeable. Hello, everyone. Dree Koger here, and on today's episode of Never Stop Dreaming, I am going to talk about change. No, not that kind of change. I don't have a penny to my name to talk about anyway, because, I'm a college kid. But that will change. Everything changes after all. People, the weather, bank account balances, and places. Places like Village Books. They tend to change much more than we ever realize. So, what was the store like when you first opened it in 1980?
It was small. It was just the two of us. It was Dee and I who were doing the store. We were in a little less than half of what is now the Paper Dreams side of our building over here. So we were in that spot on the south side. And there was a cookware store on the north side of that space.
That was Chuck Robinson. He and his wife Dee opened Village Books in 1980 in order to begin living out a dream that they had been mulling over for a long time.
Truthfully, we had, my wife and I had both been liberal arts majors and always interested in books and reading, and the idea of a bookstore sort of as a romantic idea had been with us for a long time, but it was...
Both Chuck and Dee, who are natives of the Midwest, had been working in education for about 10 years prior to opening Village Books, and while they were taking a year-long break from work in order to travel, they decided they would act on that romantic dream of bookselling that they had long been pondering.
And we both liked what we were doing very much at the time, but decided that maybe we'd try a bookstore.
After searching high and low along the Pacific coast for the perfect location, this ambitious duo settled on the seaside town of Bellingham, Washington, and began making their dream into a reality. As you can tell from my earlier conversations with Chuck, Village Books had modest beginnings. In 1980, Chuck and Dee were running their small, independent bookstore on their own, in a space not much larger than the shipping containers you see being transported in and out of Bellingham Bay, just to the west of the store. But their tiny space has grown immensely over the years.
And so we were in about 1,500 square feet, and by comparison today, if you count both the Paper Dreams side, which is part of the store, and the bookstore side, we're pretty close to 10,000 square feet.
And aside from this significant increase in square footage, quite a few other changes have come about for this Bellingham bookseller. An expansion of the selection of works, as well as the choice of gifts in Paper Dreams, the addition of an in-store cafe, and the integration of technology within the store are just a few of the changes since the opening of Village Books. And the business has even grown enough to open another store in Linden, just down the road from Bellingham. Perhaps the greatest change since 1980, however, has not been within the store, but in the world of bookselling that developed around it.
No large bookstores had really been created at that point.
When Chuck speaks of large bookstores, he is referring to the mainstream establishments like Borders, Books a Million, and, of course, Barnes & Noble, which has a location in North Bellingham. The names of these bookstores are recognizable in nearly any American household, so it would be logical to infer that these companies serve as some pretty stiff competition for local booksellers. And when I think about this, the first thing that pops into my head is a scenario like that in You've Got Mail, when Tom Hanks plays a chain bookstore owner who puts a local bookshop, run by Meg Ryan's character, out of business.
There's only one place to find a children's book in the neighborhood. That will not always be the case. And it was yours, and it is a charming little bookstore. You probably sell, what, $350,000 worth of books in a year?
How did you know that?
I'm in the book business.
I am in the book business.
I really do wonder if a similar scenario could be in store for Village Books. Maybe not in the near future, but someday nonetheless. I mean, locally owned businesses often do well for a while, but don't they usually meet their demise by succumbing to a bigger, more powerful, and oftentimes less pricey chain company? And is it not true that American consumerism is dominated by these mega corporations? Well, yes. It is these large, nationally recognized businesses that garner the most success with customers on a large scale. But oftentimes, these same businesses that were once so successful also suffer the worst repercussions when things come crashing down.
It's the final chapter for Borders. The national book chain has announced it is closing all of its stores.
Barnes & Noble Incorporated said that William Lynch has stepped down as CEO, effective immediately, just weeks after the book retailer announced weak sales, big losses, and the declining popularity of its Nook e-readers.
Borders, once the leading bookstore chain in the United States, went out of business in 2011. And Barnes & Noble has had their fair share of trouble in the past few years as well, dealing with buyouts and plunging stocks. So maybe, at least in the bookselling industry, a market run by major corporations doesn't work quite as well as everyone might think.
So it's not really clear that that's really a good model even, but that a better model might be independently owned businesses, and independently owned businesses contribute much more to their own community than a chain store does.
So, essentially what Chuck is saying is that the secret to the success of not only his business, but any local establishment that's well off, is support for and involvement in the community.
I think the local connection and the involvement in the community has been the prime thing for the stores that I know that have continued to exist and been successful over the last 10 or 15 years. I think every store that I could name around the country that has been, you know, a prominent bookstore has been very engaged in their community.
However, success within a local bookstore is very different than what a large corporation might consider successful.
And it doesn't mean that any of those people are getting rich. I mean, it's not a business that most people go into to get rich. But it's a sustainable business model that I think will last a long time into the future.
So, independent ownership seems to be the best option for booksellers. But what happens when those independent owners are no longer able to run the store? I mean, this is a morbid thought, but everyone dies eventually. Wouldn't that provide a good opportunity for larger corporations to sweep in and take over what was once a thriving local business?
That scenario just isn't very likely to happen. There's only been a couple of cases that I know of in the country where a big chain has bought an independent store. Most of what's happened with the larger independent stores in the country in the last few years, they've transitioned to other independent owners.
This transition from one independent owner to the next keeps the business locally centered. And that's what Chuck has planned for his own business when he and Dee can no longer run Village Books. In fact, they are counting on one of their longtime employees to take over the management of the store in the future. And this local change of hands is ultimately what makes these small bookstores thrive when compared to larger companies, because local owners know what local customers want to buy. For example, Barnes & Noble carries the same inventory across all of their locations. That has been a part of their success, because customers like the reliability, but it also could be the root of their shortcomings. Because when a corporate bookseller, like Barnes & Noble, is buying books to sell in its stores, it doesn't cater to the specific wants of each individual community it operates in. And that is what makes all the difference.
When our buyers buy books, they're sitting there looking and they're thinking, who in this community might be interested in this book? And we've been selling books to some of those people for, almost 36 years.
It's this insight into local interest that has kept Village Books running strongly since 1980. And this Bellingham business doesn't show signs of slowing down anytime soon. In fact, the market as a whole for local booksellers is doing quite well. There are more independent bookstores in business now than ever before. But we can still never really be 100% certain about the future. It may be very unlikely that Village Books will ever be squashed out by a chain store, but it's still a possibility. Heck, Village Books being taken over by a rogue troop of aliens is a possibility. Anything can happen, right? So perhaps that's why we shouldn't worry so much about what lies ahead. Not just for Village Books, but for anything of significance in our lives. We'd never be able to stop worrying otherwise. Of course, it's good to do everything in our power to prevent worst-case scenarios, say like a corporate buyout or an alien invasion. But maybe we shouldn't overthink things. Maybe, instead, we should just do the best we can with what we have, and not stress about everything else. The time is going to pass regardless, so why waste it worrying? As long as we hope for the best, and work for the best, chances are the best will happen. In regards to the production of this podcast, special thanks goes to Chuck and Dee Robinson for allowing me to spend time in their store and barrage anyone and everyone, including Chuck himself, with questions about Village Books. You guys are the best. Also, I'd like to credit CNN, IMBD, Sound Bible, YouTube, and Sleeping at Last with research, sound effects, and music. And last, but certainly not least, thanks to you, dear listeners. Once again, this is Dree Kober, coming to you from Bellingham, Washington, and I hope you enjoyed this episode of Never Stop Dreaming, a podcast that taps into why you should make sure your dreaming never stops.